halfway through that Sweet 16, and we got four more games coming Friday night. Thank you for coming back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. I'm your humble host, Matt Norlander. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at Matt Norlander. And my guest, Greg Doyle, who I believe I've had on once before. He's at Greg Doyle CBS. That is Greg with three G's. And he's actually here with me in Dallas for the South Regional semifinals and finals, Kansas-Michigan, and then Florida versus Florida Dunk Coast late tonight. We were going to do this in person, but it actually is slightly better audio quality if I call him. Greg, by the way, so what floor, like I'm on the 11th floor here at the Omni. Are you on the same floor as me, or are you, where are you located, by the way?
I am 8 floors above you. They give altitude to people with attitude, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, good deal. Well, hey, thanks for coming back on, man. How you doing?
I am good. I guess I've been on once before, but you always tweet out your podcast links, and it's always somebody else, and I always look at those tweets and think, well, I guess that guy's better than me. Him, her. Wait a minute. I know that guy's not better than me. When the hell is the writer going to call me?
Listen, man, you're the national columnist for CBSSports.com. You're always writing.
Damn right I am.
Damn right, right? And so you're always writing on so many different things. And I wanted to save your moment for when the tournament came around, because I figured this would be the best time to spotlight your talents and commentary.
Oh, right, right. And I did take my talents to Arlington, because I do want to watch Florida Dunk Coast. I'm just so lucky, and I think you are too. If I could have picked a region to be at, it would have been this one because of Dunk Coast. I just want to see them in person. I'm already very impressed with them as people in person. I don't mean they all look nice, like they'd help an old lady walk across the road, although I'm sure they would, but they're humble, and they don't seem affected at all by what's going on, which is kind of surprising.
We can get into a lot of stuff here, but I will lead with that, because, and I'll link this in the podcast post for listeners. Greg actually, he beat me to Arlington. I had quite the travel scenario, and I'll run that down in just a few minutes here. But so he was here in time for the media stuff, and you actually wrote off of FGCU and why you like those guys. You want to expound on that just a little bit, your experience with them on Wednesday or Thursday, I should say.
Yeah, well, the first thing I noticed when I walked out, they opened practice to the media and the public first, and then the interviews. So I've only seen highlights of them. I haven't even watched a full game, so I don't really know who anybody is. I walk out in the court area to watch them, and there's 5,000 people in the crowd, and all of a sudden I'm noticing that guy, like Feeler. I don't know much about Feeler, but I know he's white, but the guy wearing his jersey is not, and I don't know much about Comer. I want to go see him. There's a guy I think might be him, but that guy's wearing a jersey that's not even on the damn roster. So anyway, I figured out from talking to a person, didn't take much, that they don't wear their jersey numbers at practice, and they certainly aren't doing it today. But they're wearing jersey numbers, just not theirs. And that's impressive. You know, it's a small, little, tiny, nothing gesture, but to me, nothing gestures are a lot more than press releases and press conferences that are done for the sake of being analyzed. These guys not wearing the jersey numbers because they just don't care if a crowd of 5,000 people and all these TV cameras knows who is who. That's very impressive, because a lot of people would be like, I'm going to put my name on my forehead because this is my chance to get noticed, and I want you to know who I am. They didn't do that. And right away I was thinking, okay, these guys are different.
I hope we get a good one tonight between FGCU and Florida, because, obviously we've seen it almost every single time. The 13, 14, or 15 that wins that first game normally does not show up for the second one. Norfolk State and Lehigh, the most recent examples, 15s a year ago. We don't even remember their round of 32 game, but of course we'll remember the upsets over Missouri and Duke respectively. Florida Gulf Coast bucked that trend because they looked like the N1 mixtape tour. Man, I'm just hoping we get a close one tonight. Florida is good, and the interesting angle to me, Doyle, is that Florida has not won a game by single digits this year. When they win, they smack you, and they shove you out of the gym, and they win by double digits. And when the game is decided by single digits, they lose. So if Florida Gulf Coast is able to keep this close, I'll be interested to see how Florida reacts to that, because they have not fared well in tight games.
I hadn't noticed that about their margin of victory and defeat. That is interesting. What I did notice from taking my first really hard look at Florida and really just looking at who they beat, who they played and all that, is that this is not the typical Florida team that has three or four mystifying losses they don't really have any. I mean, yeah, they lost to Ole Miss, but Ole Miss is pretty good, it turns out. So they don't have a bad loss, not really, which tells me they pretty much lock in most nights. They come ready to play, even with Kenny Boynton, who I don't trust at all. He might be the worst 2,000-point scorer in college basketball history. The worst. He's a career shooter in the 39% range. The only guy I've ever seen whose offense, not overall, but whose offense just got worse and worse and worse as his career went on was Brett Nelson, also of Florida. Brett Nelson, a freshman, was a great player. I don't know if he stayed 4 years or not. By the time he was a senior, he was either gone or at the end of the pinch. He was terrible. And Kenny Boynton is closer to Brett Nelson than a lot of great players. And then Rosario is a turnover machine. And so with those two guys in your backcourt, they're not the backcourt, but the two of them, I just assume this team has 3 or 4 terrible losses that they caused. And they haven't done it. So, you know, so in other words, Florida's not going to beat itself, is my guess. So Gulf Coast is going to have to beat them, but they can do it. They can. I'm not sure they will, but they can.
I wanted to go a little bit big picture with Florida for a second. You know, transparency for the listeners, we try and do that a lot. You attended University of Florida, like my father, actually. And so you've seen plenty. I mean, you know plenty about the program, basketball, football-wise, university-wise. If Donovan wins, it'll be his third straight Elite Eight. He has missed the past two chances at going to the Final Four, losing to Louisville last year and Butler the year before. But all things said and done, when you see he's got two titles where the program is now, you know, this team does not really have a superstar whatsoever. But overall, what Donovan does with this team, you know, they're just always seemingly in the conversation now in the second weekend after, you know, before Donovan got those titles, there was a lot of he couldn't get done in the tournament. But overall, could you kind of assess what this program is basketball-wise under Donovan, what he's made it and where it's going?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm a Florida grad. I do not know more about Florida basketball or football, especially football, than the average person.
okay.
I don't pay attention.
I get you.
Florida does. Yeah, as cold blooded as it sounds, Florida does not mean any more to me as an athletic thing. They don't mean any more to me than Georgia or LSU or anybody. I don't care. I care about the academics, and so when Cam Newton his academic records were leaked by Urban Meyer or somebody at Florida leaked his academic records and Pete Thamel was using that to bury him, I was really upset about that because this is, you know, my alma mater should be behaving better than that off the field. So anyway, I care about them academically, don't give a rat's butt about them on the court. Having said that, you know, I was there and I was a student from 88 to 92 when Norm Sloan was getting run out of there and Don DeVoe was not very good and Lon Kruger was just starting to build something that went to a shocking Final Four. And that was shocking. I mean, it was shocking. They went to the Final Four, shocking. And now, you know, Donovan, of course, has won two titles, and he's been to another Final Four, a title game a long time ago, and then he's got two Elite Eights. And, you know, Florida's, you know, not based on history, if you want to go back before 94, their basketball program is not very good. But in the last 20 years, if we're going to rank basketball programs in the last 20 years, I don't know who's ahead of Florida. I don't know what school out there has a combination of more titles, Final Fours, and championship game appearances than Florida in the last 20 years. So that alone, considering that Florida might be the best program in the last 20 years, might be, and that there was nothing to build on, the foundation was nothing, that's really impressive.
You're going to get Kentucky, Duke, and Carolina fans piping up at you. I like the take. It's a good point. And how much does it factor in? How much has Florida helped? How much has Donovan helped by the fact that obviously it's a football school, tremendous amounts of money, tremendous amounts of resources. Yet Donovan, he does not and will not ever face the kind of pressure that Cal has at Kentucky. That even, like, you know, Krzyzewski doesn't have pressure, but there's still, you know, there is an expectation level that has to be met. Donovan just doesn't seem to have that. So how much do you think that actually helps why he's able to be this good? Because his quality of life and kind of his leg room there at Florida, and you know, enhances the chances that they can do this.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, I'm sure people at Florida, Donovan himself, I don't want to speak for him. I suspect a lot of people close to that program think it's a disadvantage to be a school, a football school, in recruiting, because other schools that recruit against Florida tell those recruits, if you go to Florida, they're good and blah, 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 but you'll never be the biggest man on campus ever. Never. But the schools not even trying to beat, you know, the Kentuckys, well, Duke, North Carolina, those schools can tell the recruits, you go to Florida and you're second fiddle to spring practice. You come here and this is basketball 365. So I don't think there's any advantage at all to being under the radar, because winning the basketball is not all about recruiting, but it sure is a lot about recruiting. And I think it's harder to recruit to Florida than it is to recruit it to the schools he's trying to beat.
Okay. One more note related to Florida, Florida Gulf Coast. Actually, I got a quick story to tell here, and then if you've got a reaction, cool. If not, then we'll move on. But I did want to share it. I'm going to have a post on it this afternoon on the Ion College basketball blog. So I fly out from Connecticut on Thursday to come down here to Dallas, and I had a connection in Atlanta, and you know, I'm waiting to get on the plane, and I look over and I see this this kid wearing a Florida Gulf Coast Dunk City T-shirt. And from afar, I also saw he had like a blue track jacket on, and I was like, okay, now the fans come out. But then we're getting on to board the plane, and the kid's tall, like he's 6'10", and so I go, are you on the team? And he said, yeah. I was like, oh, what are you doing here right now? Because as we're boarding the plane, you are there watching them practice and go through media day stuff. And as it turns out, you know, he's a redshirt transfer. His name's Nate Hicks, played at Georgia Tech. He cannot travel with the team because of an NCAA rule. Now, if you're a regular redshirt, if you're a redshirt freshman, you can travel with the team because there is still, like, you can still go into a game and play if, like, a dire situation happened. If Florida Gulf Coast had five players go out of the game with injury, you would have to burn up your year, but you can still play. If you're a redshirt transfer, there is no possibility. So he watched the first weekend games at the campus at a nearby restaurant with his girlfriend. They went to the same place on Sunday as they did Friday, wore the same clothes because it was superstitious. You know, there's another transfer from Marquette who plays for Florida Gulf Coast. He can't afford to come to this. Him and his girlfriend, Nate Hicks, they were going to drive the 9 hours, but only because she had the miles did they decide to fly, because they wouldn't have been able to afford a plane ticket. He can't even go with the team from the hotel, take the bus, go to the locker room. He will actually have to walk in. He can't even walk in with the team. He'll walk in as a commoner with a ducat in hand, special team tickets. Like, one of the players or coaches actually had to give them one of their six allotted tickets that they normally give to friends and family. He'll walk in, walk down the steps, onto the court, sit with the team. I don't even know if he can go with them into the locker room after the game. I think he can. He just can't leave from the arena in the team bus and go back to the team hotel. He can't stay with the team. He's staying with his girlfriend's family. So I just thought it was one of those weird things, you know, NCAA rule. He said, you know, I just find it interesting that the school is able to pay for all the cheerleaders and spirit squads to stay, to travel. Meanwhile, you know, I'm only fortunate enough to be here because my girlfriend happened to have the frequent flyer miles. So that's the only reason why he's coming. And she has family in Texas. If they were playing in Indianapolis or LA or DC, they probably would not even be at the game. I just thought a hell of a coincidence he was on my flight. And then to hear the story kind of just angered me with the NCAA more, but I guess I kind of get the point, you know?
Well, I don't really get the point. I know it happens all the time. I saw it happen to Dante Jones. He transferred from Rutgers about a decade ago to Duke and had to sit out a year, and I remember that. That's when I realized that rule, too, because I saw Dante Jones up in the crowd at the, I don't know if it was the Final Four, whatever that year was, at the tournament. I saw him up in the crowd dressed to the nines, looked great up there. But 12 rows up, and I walked up there and asked him, why are you, you're Dante Jones, right? Yeah, why are you up here? Why? And he told me the deal, and I thought it was unfair to him. Nate Hicks interests me because this guy, Andy Enfield, the coach at FGCU, has a knack, not luck, but a skill, a gift for making players better. You know, that's his secret. And if you want to talk about this some more, we can, we don't have to, but he's not what I thought he was. I need to write this. He's not the charming, incredibly likable. I mean, he's not unlikable. He's not uncharming, but he's not. I thought he was going to walk up there on that dais and sit up there and win me over like John Calipari wins me over, like Shaka Smart, Brad Stevens, and just Buzz Williams, by, you know, his own unique personality, but by the force of his personality, I was going to say to myself, I see why everybody's playing for him. I'm playing hard for him. I see why they're winning. No, I don't see it. I mean, he's a normal guy. I think he must just be brilliant at player development. And the reason I bring all that up is this next kid wasn't very good at Georgia Tech. He was a big-time recruit, but wasn't very good. I'll be real curious to see what infield, if he stays, can do with Hicks.
Exactly. And Hicks had told me, you know, listen, he basically came. Enfield was an assistant at Florida State. Hicks ended up going to Georgia Tech, but Enfield really recruited him hard. And so then Hicks just wanted a little more playing time. He kind of realized playing at a lower level might be better for him. And his entire reason for coming to FGCU was Enfield. I mean, he was just, you know, he praised the man without even having to go out of his way. We'll see. It'll be interesting. Now, Enfield is obviously a coaching candidate. Well, that'll be something we deal with going forward after this weekend, regardless, win or lose. I wanted to touch on, before we get to the rest of the tournament real quick, I wanted to touch on Michigan and Kansas. We have that one tonight. That's actually, that's the opening act. So that's an intriguing one. I think Michigan will win. I think it's going to be actually a really good game. Any thoughts on either of these teams in general? I think both have the capability to get to the title game, personally.
Yeah, see, I don't think Kansas does unless Ben McLemore starts playing a whole lot better. And he might, you know, he might. But he's slumping so bad that was the dominant focus of the press conferences yesterday at Kansas. I mean, you know, there were several focuses. But if you look at the Q&As with Bill Self and with the players that Kansas brought in there, and you look at the questions and you chart them, like, what was asked most? It was McLemore by far. It's like, what's wrong with him? You know, basically, what's wrong with him? And can you guys win if he's like this? So, anyway, he's going to get out of that funk now, or they're in trouble. You know, Michigan's roster, it's weird. Bill Self is a monster recruiter and a great coach and all that. But roster to roster, Michigan has the roster of one seed, and Kansas does not, which is a real credit to Self's coaching this year. But I know McLemore is thought to be a possible number one overall pick, so it's not like they have nobody. But just of the two programs, Michigan has more talent on paper. Anyway, I'm going to see them both with my eyeballs for the first time. But you put all that talent that Michigan has, and you give them a coach like Beilein, who might be the best X and O coach in college basketball. I have subjective, and it's impossible to say, but if we're going to talk about the best X and O coach in college basketball, especially for offense, Beilein's got to be the conversation. So you give that guy that kind of talent, and that's scary. And anyway, I suspect they'll win tonight. But if McLemore goes off, we'll see. Who knows?
That's true. I think that one's going to be a good one. I fear Florida's going to run Dunk City out of the gym. I hope I'm wrong. Just a hunch. Hey, by the way, since you've been to the arena and I haven't yet, just how big of a monstrosity / embarrassment / unnecessity is this entire setup at Jerry's Space House? I saw the photo. It looks ridiculous. Is it even more ridiculous in person? Did you actually step out?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you describe it for listeners and whether you think this is okay or just a complete overproduction?
Well, I've got two different angles from it, which is good, because if all I saw was what I saw yesterday, I would say it's awful. It's ridiculous. It's way too big because the crowd, there was no way the crowd was empty. I mean, there's 5,000 people there, but in that case, 5,000 people looks like nothing. So seats are empty, and it looks like they're playing basketball in a game in the Billy Atlantic Ocean, and there's no perception at all. And I didn't see very much shoot shots going in. You know, it looked tough. But I was there. This might have been the first organized game there ever. I don't know. It was an NBA All Star game was there 2-3 years ago, and I was there for that. And I remember. I don't know if it was because of the way the lights were reflecting off the luxury boxes, or the way the lights were dark in certain areas and light on the court. I don't know what it was, but I remember sitting there thinking, this is a very intimate feel for a 100,000 monstrosity. And it was obviously a trick of lighting because it's not intimate at all. But it looked no worse than any other football place looks. It looked Ford Field in Detroit, you know, it looked no worse than anything else once it was full of people.
Okay, that'll be interesting. And obviously, Cowboy Stadium gets it this year because when you host the Final Four, you get it the year before for a regional. It's almost like a dress rehearsal, and so the Final Four will be in Arlington next year. I'll be interested to just experience that and see what it's like because it just looks absolutely massive. All right, I want to touch on Thursday night's games real quick. A lot of it isn't worth talking about, but you actually have Ohio State winning it all, which shocked me, but you're an Ohio guy. You live there now. Yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to accuse you of a little bias there. But no, why did you pick the Buckeyes? And you're halfway home now after they get, you know, a close shave of a win against Zona in Cali last night.
Well, they've had two close shaves. I don't feel good about that pick at all. I went with the Big Ten, and it wasn't intentional. I know when the bracket came out, before the bracket came out, like literally minutes before, I was thinking to myself, what's your strategy? What are you going to do? And my strategy was, I'm going to pick the better point guard in every game if I think I know which one's better, and or the better coach, and not necessarily a better coach, but maybe tougher coach. And if one school has the better point guard and a coach I think is real tough, then that's a gimme. And so, you know, Mata's real tough, and Aaron Kratz is incredible, and Trey Burke at Michigan is incredible, and Beeline's brilliant, as I've said, I think. So I just ended up having both those schools winning all the way to the title game. And I had Indiana in the Final Four, and I had Illinois getting, you know, losing in the Elite Eight, and it just worked out that way. Now, 2 weeks into this thing, or a week and a half, then, you know, the Big Ten's gone except for the last two, Ohio State and Michigan. So I don't feel good about it. Plus, I saw Louisville in person, and you really have to see Louisville in person, not just on TV, not highlights, but in person, to appreciate how massive a task it's going to be to beat them, because they play with that style that VCU plays with, the Havoc, you know, style, only they do it with Louisville athletes. And that's a scary, scary thing, and I'm not sure who beats Louisville. If I had to do my bracket right now and start over with whoever's left, I'd have Louisville winning it all, because I just don't see how anybody beats that team.
I agree. I actually initially had Louisville. You know, these brackets get released. The desk wants them from us. They want our brackets within 2 hours, and I picked Louisville. Then I saw everyone except you. Literally, every expert on our site except you had Louisville, so I was like, screw that. I went with Gonzaga. Backfired on me. I would take Louisville. I saw them plenty in person this year. I was at that Big East tournament. I totally agree with all you're saying. I do want to ask you about Marquette as well, because you saw Louisville and Lexington at the first weekend.
Hold on one second. While we're talking here,
okay.
I'm on Twitter just looking at it. You're tweeting? Like this is, am I talking too long? Am I boring you? There's a tweet here to you about Nathan Finno, whoever that is, and you're tweeting about it. Focus here, Matt. Focus. Me and you, baby.
Okay. Listen, this is my secret. I can schedule my tweets. Okay. So I'm not tweeting while we're podcasting. And that was a good column about this ridiculous rule that you have to have everything in NCAA cups when you walk out there. I mean,
I'm sure that's interesting, but I scheduled mine too, so you're going to get a direct message from me right now that says shut up. That was scheduled. I didn't just write that on Twitter. Actually, that was scheduled 20 minutes ago.
Hold on. What are you doing checking Twitter while we're on the podcast? I've only got one screen up, and it's the Skype screen. So what's that about, Doyle?
You're boring.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's what I thought. So you were in Lexington, and you saw Louisville. You gave us your dibs on Louisville and your rundown, but you also saw Marquette. Obviously, they're going to play in the Elite Eight against Syracuse and Buzz Williams. I'm going to give the floor to you, and whatever you want to say about Buzz Williams and how much you enjoy that man, this is your pedestal right here.
Yeah, I know, because you're going to get on Twitter and send out another planned tweet to Nathan Sino. Yeah, Marquette is another thing you've got to see in person. Everybody you've got to see in person. My bracket sucks, and it sucks every year because I don't see any games in person. I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't even pretend that I do. And that bracket, the night it came out, you said our brackets had to be up within 2 hours. My bracket was up. The bracket's released at 7, I guess, or what, you know, whatever time the bracket was totally done, within 7 minutes, I was calling our guy and saying, here's my picks. I mean, 7 minutes. I did Blink Theory, but the whole damn thing, Malcolm Gladwell style.
Yeah.
But you see Marquette in person, and you see how hard they play, and I realize that's, in a way, stupid. I mean, everybody plays hard, okay? But when people saw Tyler Hansbrough in high school, they said, no, he's not all that skilled. Like, he and Josh McRoberts were the same high school class. McRoberts was longer, more skilled, more bouncy, and yet everybody said Hansbrough's going to be a better college player because he plays so damn hard. Even compared to everybody else, he plays so damn hard that will make him a better college player. And they're right. And I missed it, actually. I was the one saying, no, McRoberts will be better. And I was wrong because I thought everybody plays hard in college. Didn't realize there's guys that play hard and there's freaks like Hansbrough. Marquette is freaks like Hansbrough. Everybody plays hard. Everybody plays hard. But Marquette plays harder. I don't know how that is. You know, I've heard NFL coaches, I think it's NFL coaches. No, actually, you know what? It's college basketball coaches. I heard them over the years routinely will say that guys come to college and they think they're playing hard and they don't realize there's like 10% more to give. And it's hard to get that 10% more out of them. Buzz gets that 10% out of them, maybe gets even more than that if it's possible. So anyway, Marquette plays so damn hard and rough. They are rough, rough. I should emphasize that. It's more than just effort. They play rough. And if the referee lets them play, you almost can't beat them because they know how to play football and you're playing basketball. Football wins if the referee lets you play football. So anyway, that's why they're so good.
No, I agree. And they're also talented. I think a lot of Marquette fans, even Buzz Williams sometimes, they get frustrated with this, lunch pail, blue collar identity that they have. You know, you can't name a player on the team. You know, casual fans. I mean, you know, Vanderblue and Devontae Gardner, college hoops fans know who these guys are, but casual fans, you know, Marquette's, you know, only sex appeal is Buzz Williams, and that's actually a scary statement in and of itself. First of all, and Doyle did send me a direct message that said, shut up. So that was funny. Hey, Syracuse over Indiana. This was the only one that I had right in this whole bracket. I did call that before the tournament started, but were you surprised by IU just putting up just an absolute clunker? This was the number one offense, empirical data showed, in college basketball this year. They scored more points per possession than any other team, and they looked like a JV team going up against the best varsity team in the county last night. They just looked completely out of sorts.
Yeah, I looked at the box. I watched the game, some of it. It didn't focus great, but I did watch it. I didn't realize what I was seeing until I looked at the box score. The box score shows Victor Oladipo leading Indiana in scoring on just six shots. He was five of six on the floor, 16 points, I think, which shows a couple things. One is it shows that Indiana wasn't figuring out who's scoring and getting him the ball, or B, it shows that he couldn't get shots off against that zone. He couldn't do it. The ones he got off, he made, but he just couldn't find any. You know, that zone does weird things to teams, and I don't even want to give Indiana too much blame for that. That zone, when that zone's on, it's on. And the thing about that zone is it's almost like a streak shooter. There are times where the zone, I don't know if they're not communicating well or they didn't all have their cereal that day or whatever, but there are times when the zone's good. It's always good. And then there's times where it's just incredible. And last night it was incredible, and Indiana couldn't figure out and couldn't hit jumpers a way to beat it.
All right, two big picture things real quick, and then I'll let you go. I know you got to work out. I actually have to work out too, but I have to post this podcast. So our gym sessions will not cross paths, unfortunately, today.
Oh,
but I could actually, you know what? I could use a few pointers. So maybe tomorrow, you know, afterward, maybe we meet up and you show me how to get myself really in shape here.
Well, just so you know, I work out only every other day because, and this is the truth, I work out so hard, I can't do it 2 days in a row. And also, I work out so hard, the testosterone, and more importantly, the testosterone that you build up from working out hard, and this is a true story, you build up testosterone. When I used to work out every single day, fanatically, I used to work out every single day and like wouldn't take a day off for months at a time and realize that I have too much testosterone going through my body. I'm a jerk. You know, this is why I'm a jerk. Because I can't control it. Yeah, I can't. I had a couple things I did a couple years ago. I went too far with a few people in an angry way, you know, like not what we're talking about, but like I had the moral high ground about whatever was going on. But by the time I was done flipping out, moral high ground was gone. I'd lost it. And so I had to make some changes. And one of the changes I made was don't work out every day. Don't build up the testosterone, but because you do work out every other day, you better go really hard. Anyway, so yeah, don't come to the gym with me expecting to do anything I do because what I do is a little bit nuts.
Well, do you, and you had kind of touched on that with a really, really good Marshall Henderson column, earlier this week. I'll have that linked up in the podcast post.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's Marshall Henderson. I can post that line, Marshall. You don't want to get close to that line. You're there now. Actually, get away from it. That was me a couple years ago, and I had to make some changes, and that was one of the changes I made.
Do you find that you write better on a day when you work out, or do you find you write not as well when you work out?
No, there's no difference. Okay. The writing is like shooting in the gym or maybe in games. If you're relaxed, whatever your ability level is, whatever it is, good or bad, if you're relaxed, it comes out. You either hit shots or you don't. On a golf course, if you're relaxed, you're either hit the ball straight or you're not. If you're relaxed, whatever your talent you got, it comes out. And writing for me is the same way. As long as I'm getting out of my own way and just shut my brain off and let the words come out, they come out. It doesn't matter.
All right, good deal. Two quickies here. One, as a national columnist, you know, you kind of you step back and you look at all sports, college basketball in general. You covering this tournament, the sport. You know, you did it for. I remember reading you way back when you did the regional stuff for ESPN.com, and you were kind of just doing the. So it's kind of crazy to think about way back when I was, you know, still in college reading that stuff. But what it was then, what it is now. I mean. Are you satisfied with what college basketball delivers as a whole in 2013?
Yeah, and I've already said I don't watch a whole lot of it on TV. I don't pay real close attention on TV, but I read about it a ton, probably more than ever. I think it's overblown. People complaining about college basketball. I know it's overblown. I'm not seeing these games myself in person. All we do is romanticize things that happened years ago. Well, it's not as good as it was 10 years ago. Yeah, it is. You know, and shut up. Yeah, it is. It's not as good as it was 30 years ago. Ralph Sampson. Well, maybe there's no Ralph Sampson. I'll give you that. We don't have Michael Jordan. I'll give you that. But overall, on a day-to-day basis, those are just two guys on two teams. Otherwise, there's 300 teams still playing games, making do without the fact there's no Ralph Sampson here. It's fine. Everybody shut up.
All right, good deal, Doyle. Oh, man. Hey, listen, great, great showing here.
You said two things. I talked too long. What's the second thing?
I was just going to let it. Okay, I was going to ask you the best. Look at you, keeping me. I didn't want to keep you too long, but okay. So the best tournament game you've ever covered in person. Do you remember what it was?
Oh, wow. No, I can't conjure that up right now, but I can conjure up the worst. The worst was Duke played UConn. I want to say it was Final Four. It might have been the Elite Eight, but I think it was Final Four. Duke played UConn. UConn had Emeka Okafor, is that UConn team, and the referees took it over and fouled out everybody. And I remember writing my story. You're supposed to try to have a name pretty high on your story if you can. The first two names I wrote were the referees, and I said, and I'm writing these guys' names because this is what they wanted. So here you go, and here's your names. And I think I wrote their full names three or four times in that story because they hijacked that game. And I believe it was a Final Four game, and it should have been so great. You know, Duke UConn, the Final Fours just didn't work out that way.
How about that? Okay, good deal, man. Well, yeah, you know, I figure you have a long history in covering this tournament, so I didn't know if anything stood out, but. Hey, follow him on Twitter at Greg Doyle CBS. He's a really good guy. He is a good guy with a good heart. And I appreciate you taking some time here. Again, this is kind of weird knowing you're 11 floors above me right now, or 8 floors above me, wherever you are. But hey, I'll see you in just a little bit there. And hopefully we get a couple of good ones tonight. All right, buddy?
Okay. All right, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
No problem
at
all.
About time.
All right. Exactly. About time. Doyle, we'll be back on Monday, and we'll have a podcast wrapping up all the action and then looking ahead to the Final Four. Thanks for listening. Subscribe on iTunes, tell your friends, and enjoy the games.